Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And I'm going to delve back into looking at the Paris Peace Conference. I look at this from time to time. And today we're going to look at Italy and the conference, and the point in April 1919 when the Italian delegation refused to pay to participate any further. Of course, always with this, we look at Margaret Macmillan's brilliant book, Peacemakers. And overall, it's a great kind of standard text on the subject. She writes, "The most serious dispute at the peace conference had just reached an acute stage, and it could not have happened at a worse time. With the German delegates about to arrive in Paris, it was essential that the peacemakers present a united front. Although Italy's demands at the conference covered three areas, Africa, the Middle East, and Europe, it was the ones in the Adriatic, particularly the port of Fiume, that caused the problem. The quarrel was over territory, but it was also over principle, since the Italians wanted what they had been promised under the old diplomacy, while the Americans stood firm on the new. And it was a clash of personalities between Wilson and the Italians, especially Sonnino, their foreign minister. It was about whether the peace meant sharing the loot, as the Americans said contemptuously, or drawing borders based on ethnic lines." So what had Italy been promised? Well, the first thing in 1915 was that Italy had been promised a share of the post-war spoils at the secret Treaty of London. The Italians, who had debated whether or not to become involved in the war between 1914 and 15, finally decided to take the plunge on the Allied side in 1915. The Triple Alliance that Italy was a signatory to before the First World War obliged Italy to fight on the side of Germany and Austria. However, one of the long-standing territorial designs that Italy had was over the Austrian Alps, and the Italian population who lived beyond the Italian border in the Tyrol region. The demands of Italy's liberal government, which was decidedly illiberal, as its pre-war invasion of Libya shows, and its increasingly belligerent and jingoistic nationalism demonstrated, was that Italy should be given significant compensation for its involvement in the war. the losses that Italy sustained were immense, and contrary to popular belief, Italy's contribution in 1918 actually was highly significant, and the dismissal of Italians as not being a particularly martial people or being failures on the battlefield wasn't entirely deserved or justified in 1918. Woodrow Wilson viewed the Treaty of London as being entirely illegitimate. Wilson told the Italians that because America had only been an associate power of the Allies from 1917 onwards, America was not obliged to stand by any of the agreements entered into before America's involvement in the war. America isn't a full ally of Italy, it's not a full ally of Great Britain, it's an associate power, and so it doesn't endorse any secret treaties previously cooked up. Particularly as so many of these secret treaties flouted the principles that Woodrow Wilson hoped to uphold, the principles of national self-determination and open covenants of being transparent about diplomatic affairs in general. Margaret Macmillan writes, Orlando, the Italian Prime Minister, had hoped to avoid confrontation. He failed, however, to recognise that Wilson was not just another politician and that the world was not the same in 1918 as it had been in 1914. Orlando was a product of the murky world of Italian politics with its deals, arrangements and doling out of patronage. He was a short, square man, much given to gesturing, a Sicilian by birth and a lawyer by training, who had always found that difficulties could be papered over with the right words. He took a straightforward pride in both his country and his family. In Paris he boasted to the table of Americans that he had produced 3 children in 31 months. Impossible, he said, to do it any faster. Nicholson wrote him off unfairly as a white, weak, flabby man, but Orlando had held his country together when it faced defeat. Orlando wouldn't have been the only figure in 1918 that was unable to comprehend precisely how far politically and ideologically the world had changed after 4 years of total war, and how far the figures such as Wilson were determined to bring about new rules of operating. As I've argued before, Wilson isn't quite the unblemished liberal figure that conventional histories might suggest. Woodrow Wilson wasn't really looking to create a world that was primarily safe for democracy and the rule of law, though if these things were possible, then they would be attractive. What Woodrow Wilson was hoping to do was to create a world which was beneficial towards American trade and strategic power. What Woodrow Wilson was looking for was the end to colonial empires and the end to unfair economic barriers around large parts of the world, India, Africa, parts of Asia, which meant that American trade and manufacturers were kept out by imperial tariff walls. What Wilson hoped for was free navigation of the seas, and he saw self-determination as the way in which to receive to achieve these. Woodrow Wilson was as opposed to the British Empire and the French Empire as he had been the German Empire, and at one point threatens to make a separate peace with Germany, which frightens the life out of the British and the French. And he saw all of these empires as fundamentally illegitimate, and what he thought he would do, using the 14 points and the Paris Peace Conference, was to create a kind of a more level playing field, which of course America, as the dominant world economic power, would manage to bend to its own advantage. So he had little time for these kinds of backdoor deals, which were really simply going to inhibit America's ability to chart a rather more prosperous economic destiny for itself. The war had placed immense burdens on Italy. Italy had gone into the war as a socially divided country, the north being a traditionally industrial heartland centred around Piedmont, and the south being largely agrarian and deindustrialised. The economy had grown very slowly following unification, and there had been various national humiliations, such as the defeat of Italy by Ethiopia at the Battle of Adowa in 1896. The papacy had instructed the faithful in Italy, majority of the population, not to recognise the new republic, and so the socially conservative yet socially divided society with this ingrained socially religious problem was hardly the kind of the promise that had been made to Italy's revolutionaries, who had hoped to see a new and egalitarian republic emerge as a result of the struggles from the 1840s through to the 1860s. So you had also within Italy a strain of radicalism, of left radicalism, that manifests itself in explosions of protest and violence in the 2 years after the First World War. Italy was the poorest of the great powers and owed something in the order of £700 million after the First World War. And it had an inflation rate higher than anywhere else other than Russia. Italian soldiers who'd been poorly led and equipped had suffered immense losses for the Battle of Caporetto in 1917. And by 1918, half a million had died, and many others wounded, for a negligible amount of territory. So you can imagine the sense of national grievance, of simmering resentment, particularly when the high-handed French and the British dismiss Italy's demands out of hand at the Paris Peace Conference. Margaret Macmillan writes, "Liberals and moderate socialists withdrew their support from the government, appalled at what they saw as its profound cynicism. And Orlando increasingly had to rely on the nationalist right." So there had been a shift towards the right in Italian politics during the war. Orlando badly needed a triumph, or the appearance of one, in Paris. If Sonnino and his conservative friends insisted on the letter of the Treaty of London, then they should have it. If some nationalists wanted even more territory than Italy had been promised on the eastern side of the Adriatic, Fiume, for example, then that was possible as well. Orlando might even win over liberals by talking of Wilsonian principles of self-determination, in particular for all those Italians scattered outside Italy.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
but not for the Germans and Slavs who were going to come under Italian rule. It was Orlando who came up with the formula that excited the nationalists and so infuriated Italy's allies. The Treaty of London plus Fiume. He was as much surprised as anyone when Fiume became a matter of life and death to Italian nationalists and a sticking point for Wilson. Fiume, on the Dalmatian coast, which is on the Croatian side of the Adriatic, suddenly became a city that was pivotal to all of Italian nationalism's hopes and dreams. And it would be around Fiume that the Italian fascist Gabriele D'Annunzio would first spring to international prominence. Orlando's foreign minister, Sonnino, was interested in what the Treaty of London offered, which was chunks of the Middle East and North Africa and territory in the Alps. However, Sonnino was less interested in Fiume. He was apprehensive, said Lloyd George, lest Italy should sacrifice bigger things in the frenzy for this trivial claim. Sonnino was going to be the person who would take most of the blame for the disaster that unfolds for Italy in Paris. Orlando would get off lightly, perhaps because he didn't actually really speak English very well. The Americans and British had very little idea what Orlando was saying. Lloyd George said of Orlando, he had an attractive and amiable personality, which made him an extremely pleasant man to do business with. But there was no fundamental difference in outlook or principle between him and President Wilson, which seems to be a kind of quite a huge misunderstanding on Lloyd George's part. Sonnino had been a liberal of the kind of the early generation, the unification generation, who'd gradually moved towards the nationalist right as he grew older. He was in his 70s when the Paris Peace Conference began. He'd been Prime Minister twice in the various kind of fractious and chaotic Italian governments in the run-up to 1914, and in 1914 he himself became Foreign Minister. When war broke out, Italy, allied to its enemy Austria-Hungary and Germany, broke these ties. Sonnino was one of the figures who were inclined to keeping the deal with the Central Powers and saw that as really the most likely course for Italy's future well-being. Sonnino had been at the Treaty of London. The Treaty of London offered a whole range of goodies to Italy. Islands and a stretch of Dalmatia along the Austria-Hungary's Adriatic coastline, where Fiume indeed would have been. The port of Vlora in Albania, a protectorate over Albania, the Dodecanese Islands off the coast of Asia Minor, and a share of the Ottoman Empire, which for that the Italians assumed would involve a chunk of North Africa and perhaps even some attractive bits of Asia Minor, sort of some bits of Turkey itself. Italy would also have the same rights as Britain and France in the Arabian Peninsula and the Red Sea. So these are some extraordinary giveaways, and probably something that was offered in the heat of desperation, and the British and the French, as good imperialists do, are always happy to hand other people's territory away when it costs them nothing. It's only when the realities of victory actually emerge and the possibilities of victory actually emerge do the rules start to kind of change, and the British and French become more circumspect about the nature of the post-war world and what it might cost them and what opportunities they might have to forego for this kind of generosity to Italy, which they believe hasn't really been reciprocated through effort and action throughout the war. At the end of the war, the Italian armies very quickly moved to occupy most of the territory that they had been promised, which Lloyd George referred to as the huckstering spirit. And the Pichon, the French foreign minister, said to the British ambassador that Italian troops were likely to provoke the Slav population along the Dalmatian coastline. He said they would relish bloodshed as it would enable them to keep hold of territory which would certainly not be given to them by any treaty of peace. Most Italians viewed the Croats as the agents of the hated Austro-Hungarians and saw them as fundamentally untrustworthy and a people ripe for kind of colonisation or for forced ejection from those territories. When the Italians moved to occupy Croatia and Slovenia at the end of the war, they acted in a high-handed and chauvinistic manner, not so much liberators from the tyranny of the Austro-Hungarians, but as conquerors. In the eyes of the Italians, General Bergoglio, who would later emerge under Mussolini, the Serbs themselves were fundamentally untrustworthy, and it was the Serbs who had, along with the Croats and the Slovenes, ambitions in creating a greater Slav nation, a South Slav nation, or Yugoslavia, who the Italians viewed as the main threat, though Bergoglio did actually acknowledge that he thought the Serbs were quite simple people and the wily Croats and Slovenes would be the ones who would wind up dominating them in the new Slav state that would emerge. The Italians were not happy about the idea of a powerful new Slavic nation emerging on its borders. They were outraged when a chunk of the Austro-Hungarian navy in the Adriatic was handed over to the new Yugoslav nation, so much so that a torpedo boat went and sank the flagship while it sat in harbour, killing the crew. And by late 1918, it was clear that the government were orchestrating displays of national unity on the streets of Italy. In Rome, Genoa and Naples, crowds came out to cheer for what were referred to as pro-Dalmatian days, demand that action be taken to seize the Dalmatian coastline, or the Irredentalands, as they were known. The Americans promised the Italians that the Adriatic would not become a sea dominated by Yugoslavia, and it wouldn't become a sea where its Yugoslav navy posed a threat to Italy. How is this possible? Well, the new League of Nations would make this possible, something that the French had already dismissed as a joke. The Americans now suggested, or Wilson's delegation now suggested to the Italians, that they had nothing to fear. Orlando argued that this was foolish, that it was much, much easier for the Italian army to dominate the Balkans and provide Italian security instead of waiting for some fictitious imaginary force to come and solve Italy's problems. The Italians spent a lot of time trying to debate with the British and the Americans to bring them round to their point of view. In December 1918, Orlando, for example, tells the British and the French that the Yugoslavs were persecuting the Italians. This is a kind of a classic sort of victim narrative that is tried time and time again. And that attacks were being taken on Italian citizens in the Dalmatian coastline. He was demanded that the British and the French didn't recognise the new Yugoslav state. Reluctantly, the British and French initially agree, but later on, obviously, they give it their full backing. Robert Cecil, a British diplomat, said, "The fact is that the greediness of the Italian foreign policy in all directions is leading Italy into serious difficulties. The Yugoslavs have claimed far more than is just their due, but Sonnino's stubbornness and the extravagant nature of Italy's claims have had, as a result, that it is now literally true that Italy has not a friend in Europe except ourselves, and she's doing the best to make her isolation complete." The Italians looked to Wilson to adjudicate, not realising what Wilson thought of them. He saw Italy's war motives as being entirely mercenary and calculating, and one of his first actions on arriving in Paris in 1918 was to send for a copy of the Treaty of London. When Wilson met Sonnino and Orlando for the first time, just before Christmas, and he had a long discussion on Italy's claims in the Adriatic. Both Italians thought that the meeting had gone well. But when the British ambassador, who spoke to Wilson the following day, finished the conversation, he had a different view. Wilson, the ambassador said, is very anti-Italian. He was sick to death of Orlando and Sonnino and all their ways, and he particularly did not want to have any conversation with them. So, the Italians unwittingly were walking into a great disappointment, one which was going to draw a line under the sacrifices of the war, and one which would exacerbate the problems in Italy immensely and pave the way later for Italian fascism to emerge. But we're going to return to that topic sometime tomorrow. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you on the next podcast. And do remember to visit our Patreon page if you can, and we rely on patrons and a little trickle of ad revenue that we get in order to keep the podcast going for all you guys. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.